world. Welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 203. I'm creator and host Don Hutchison. Every day I interview someone from around the world who has discovered her talents to do work she loves to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. Today I'm delighted to bring you our featured guest, Dori Clark. Welcome, Dori.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Dori, are you using your talents doing work that you love?
I think I am. I'm really excited every day to get to do what I do.
All right. Well, we want to hear the whole story. Dori Clark is the author of Reinventing You and Stand Out, which was named the number one leadership book of 2015 by Inc. magazine. A former presidential campaign spokeswoman, she teaches at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business and is a consultant and speaker for clients such as Google, Morgan Stanley, and the World Bank. You can download her free 42-page standout workbook and learn more at doriclark.com. We'll actually put that in at the end of the show. So, Dori, that's a pithy summary of your career. Tell our listeners around the world what you're doing now that has you engaged and excited, if you would.
Well, one thing that I did that was pretty exciting was I just came back yesterday from Washington, D.C., and I was speaking for the third time to the World Bank, and that was a real honor to get to do that. I was speaking about Stand Out, my latest book, and talking to a couple of hundred employees about things that they could do within the World Bank and within their professions. And, you know, some of them are doing some really fantastic work about trying to fight global poverty and things like that, how they can make sure that their best ideas get recognized and heard.
Oh, that's a beautiful idea. So this is your most recent book?
That's right, yes.
Take just a minute and tell us about it, because it sounds like a really breakthrough idea.
Thank you. Yeah, so one of the things that I've really discovered in the past decade that I've been a consultant is that so many people who I know out there, talented professionals, entrepreneurs, they have great ideas, but it is nonetheless really hard in a competitive marketplace for them to really get their true talents heard and recognized. Mm-hmm. And I want to live in a world where the best ideas get heard, where people are able to latch onto them and turn them into something great. And so in writing Stand Out, I interviewed about 50 top thought leaders in a variety of different fields, everything from business and technology to genomics and urban planning, to try to understand how the top thinkers got that way, how they came up with their ideas, how they got recognized for them, so that hopefully I could create a kind of resource guide, a roadmap, so that regular professionals can take their own best ideas and get them heard as well.
Yes, excellent. You're right. Not enough good ideas make it to the light of day for a whole bunch of reasons, and several of those reasons are obvious and not good, right?
So that's right.
Okay, so talk to us about, as you know, as you well know, one's life is about turning points or passages, as they're called, where we face issues and obstacles and challenges and make choices that impact, according to the pros or according to the psychologists, this happens every 6 or 7 years. So take us through some of your more memorable turning points in your life and tell us what happened and the decisions you made and how they impacted you going forward.
Well, one of the earliest turning points, and this is something that we were chatting about just a bit before we started recording, was the fact that I went off to college early. I entered, there's a special early entrance program at Mary Baldwin College in Virginia. So I entered college when I was 14. I ended up graduating when I was 18. I had transferred to Smith College and graduated from there. And that was a big deal, obviously, for me, but it was something really powerful and important because from the time that I was young, I grew up in a small town. I was a little frustrated that I just wanted to really get going with my life and to be able to do things, to make a difference, to make an impact. And this was before the internet. And so it was a lot harder to be able to connect with people or to operationalize some of the ideas that you had. So I realized that if I was going to do that, I needed to get a little bit of a head start. So going off to college early was a great decision for me and one that I'm very glad that I did.
Your parents must have been supportive of that because people usually go off to college at 18.
Yes, yes, they were. I mean, my mom especially, as you can imagine, was a little sad to let me go. But it's something that I really respect about my parents is that they very much were interested in the thing that would be best for me. And so even if there was a level of personal sacrifice that my mom didn't really want me to be leaving the house, she knew I really wanted to do it and that it would be beneficial. So they, you know, gave it the green light.
Yeah. What were your interests and fascinations as far as the educational curriculum? Were you into math? Were you into science? Were you into literature? What was your specialty?
I ended up being a philosophy major as an undergraduate, and then I later went on to get a master's degree from Harvard Divinity School. So I went from philosophy to theology. A lot of times folks ask what that has to do with the work that I do now. Mm-hmm. And in a practical sense, in a literal sense, it doesn't have a lot to do with it. But in a big picture sense, I think I've always been interested in these questions of how and where people find meaning.
Yes.
And as we think about the theme of your podcast, you know, right. discovering your talents and really trying to self-actualize, philosophy and religion, I think, are two pretty good starting places.
Yes, they couldn't be more seminal. And as you've seen in the research, it's amazing how our world, our quotidian world, just drives us forward to go, 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 and get. And in too many cases, there's not a lot of room for reflection. So the whole idea of philosophy and spirituality hits to the heart of that.
Yes, absolutely.
You probably know this far better than I. Who is the French mathematician? Blaise Pascal. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right.
Oh, yes.
Blaise Pascal. This is in the 1650s. Can you imagine, Dory? He said most of man's problems stem from the fact that he or she can't sit quietly in a room for 20 minutes.
That's right. If only they had iPhones.
Well, exactly right. So what happened next after the Harvard degree?
So after that, one of the turning points for me actually was, I guess you could say, I had my first real professional failure, or at least a place where something definitely didn't go the way that I thought it would or that I wanted it to. I had gotten my master's degree in theological studies, and I had decided that what I really wanted to do was become an academic and get my doctorate. And so I applied to several doctoral programs. I thought I would do English literature because I thought if you can bring philosophy and religion into literature, I thought that would be just this killer combo. It would
yes.
be so interesting.
Sounds great.
Thank you. I'm glad you think so. But unfortunately, the schools that I applied to did not.
Why? What did they say?
I guess it's like a sort of standard rejection letter, so they right. don't even really give you a reason. If I had to take a guess, one thing that I really didn't understand properly, and I mean, I guess retrospectively, it's good that I didn't get into a career in academia, is that as an undergraduate, having a wide range of interests, being a little bit of a Renaissance person, mm-hmm. is encouraged, and that's considered to be a really good thing. But once you get to doctoral programs, being a Renaissance person is really looked at askance because they want people to focus. And mm-hmm. so I suspect that them looking at, oh, I did this for undergrad, this for master's degree, you want to do something else for a doctorate, I think they probably thought I was a little bit of a dilettante.
When just the opposite was true, their loss.
That's right. That's right. So I had to find some other plans for myself. So
what'd you do?
Well, the job that I ended up getting was I was a political reporter. And I actually felt like that was a pretty good thing because I liked writing. I liked news and politics, and that seemed like a pretty good fit. But about a year into having that job, I got laid off because the newspaper industry was starting to contract mm-hmm. at the time. And then I had to shift again. I had to find another plan because there were not really other newspaper jobs available. So I went to work on a couple of campaigns, and I was the spokesperson on a gubernatorial campaign, which lost, and I was a spokesperson on a presidential campaign, which lost. So early on, I hit a number of roadblocks, and that was actually part of what later on in my career inspired me to write my first book, Reinventing You, because I had faced all of these reinventions at the beginning of my professional life and wanted to try to loop back and write this book to help people who were making a transition hopefully be able to do it with a little bit more ease than I was initially.
Yes. Well, what did you learn when you were the spokesperson? It's pretty amazing. You're still a very young person being the spokesperson in gubernatorial and presidential. How did you like that?
Thank you. It was really great experiences, actually. I mean, some of my best friends are people that I made, connections I made on those campaigns. To a certain extent, it's really like going to war with somebody mm-hmm. because you're with them practically 24 hours a day. You're working like a maniac. You're going all kinds of places around the state. And it's very, very intense. You also have the advantage of really feeling like your work matters. There's high stakes when you're yes. talking about politics and about getting the right or whatever you think the right policies are in place. So it feels very fulfilling in that way. So there's a lot of adrenaline. There's a lot of meaning and purpose. I now, of course, don't need to continue doing that. I think that people who make politics a career, I think that's a hard life. You are constantly working at pretty low pay, and there is an insatiable demand for more. But it's something I'm very glad to have done.
Yeah, exactly. So what was the next step? What was the next piece of the puzzle?
Thank you. So the next piece after I worked on these campaigns was I decided that I would come back to Boston, which is where I had been living, and I would run a nonprofit. So that seemed like a kind of calmer option, but one that would be satisfying. So I took a job running a bicycling advocacy group, actually.
And, oh, I love that.
Yeah, thank you. So for 2 years I did that. And it was really very, very much an iterative process because I did not come into the job thinking this or knowing this, but about a year in, I came to realize that the skills that you need to develop as a nonprofit executive director are the same skills, the exact same skills that you need to run your own business. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of planted the idea in my head, hey, I should do this myself.
Tell us about the bicycling advocacy group. Is this all about bicycle safety and paying attention to the bicyclists on the road, or what is it?
Yeah, that's a lot of it. We did a lot of things. We covered a lot of terrain in terms of our advocacy, but we probably spent most of our time on things like working with the state highway department to try to get the roadways that were constructed to be done in a bicycle-friendly format. Because when you're building a road, that's something that's 40, 50 years. And if you construct it the wrong way, then it basically means that for a generation or two, you're not going to have bicycling in that area. So we worked with them on a lot of engineering things. We also did advocacy with the local transit authorities to try to do things like getting bike racks on buses or improving the hours that bicycles would be allowed on the subway so that we could have more multimodal transportation. We liaised essentially the state parks and rec department to try to get more bike paths constructed, which is kind of a tricky process sometimes because you have to get a lot of railroad right-of-ways and secure the rights to them in order to be able to piece them together. But so we did all of those things to try to essentially just make it easier and better to do bicycling in the state.
Yeah, that sounds totally worthwhile, and I'm sure you were good at it. So what did you do next? What was the next turning point?
So after 2 years running the nonprofit, I decided to launch my consulting business. And so that was in the summer of 2006. And I haven't looked back. It's been coming up on my close to 10-year anniversary of being an entrepreneur. And within that, there's a lot of different things that I do. I teach business school and write books and give talks and consult. But I've generally been an entrepreneur for the past decade, which has been very satisfying for me.
Yes. So what do you think are the reasons that people get stuck at different points in their lives and aren't able to move forward? And most people's careers, yours is an example, it wasn't always perfectly smooth sailing when you wanted to get your doctorate in literature and theology. I mean, there are setbacks that people have, but why do people get stuck and sort of settle for what's in front of them instead of moving, figuring out how to develop a strategy and move past it? Where does it go wrong?
I think there's a couple of places where it can go wrong. One is that I've been really continually astonished as I tour around speaking about Stand Out, my new book. There are a lot of people who, at a really fundamental level, have real questions about whether they deserve to stand out, whether their ideas are any good, whether anybody should listen to them. And so I think, obviously, before you can choose to take the steps that are necessary to get your ideas heard, you need to believe that they're worth hearing and worth spreading. And so I think that that's a really important place that a lot of people get hung up. Another one, which I think certainly is a factor, is that sometimes people get, you know, the so-called golden handcuffs, where maybe they've signed themselves up for a quality of life that they're locked into because maybe they bought the really big house or the really pricey car, and they realize that they're not particularly happy doing the things that enable them to have that standard of living, but unless they want to give it up and downsize, which not a lot of people are willing to do, they aren't necessarily willing to make that trade-off, so they get locked in.
Right, exactly. So for those handful of people, for that small minority of people who don't want to think they do deserve it, that are locked in with the golden handcuffs, but are willing to show, really willing to get out and in a measured way, obviously with a good strategy in mind, you can't just drop everything and say, hey, I'm going to be that writer I always wanted to be. You've got to be conscious of your family and your responsibilities. But what would you say about how people could stepwise, if you would, move slowly but surely in another direction without giving it all up or without saying locked into the golden handcuffs? What would you say?
Well, this is an area that I talk about quite a bit in my first book, Reinventing You,
right.
Because I am very much an advocate of people doing things in a responsible and measured way. I mean, I'd never tell people, oh, just quit your job. It'll be fine.
Right.
You need to be a little bit more strategic with it. But if you are strategic, you actually can really make a lot of progress over time. And so one of the stories that I tell is about a woman named Patricia Fripp. And today, and for a number of years, Patricia Fripp has been a professional public speaker. That's her job. She gets paid to give talks, and she makes a very good living. But I was fascinated to learn about her background because, you know, when you think about the kind of people who become paid professional speakers, well, where do they come from? What is their background? You might think, oh, well, maybe they were a celebrity or an athlete or a politician or whatever, and now they get paid to speak. Patricia Fripp started her career as a hairdresser.
Uh-huh.
And I was just fascinated by that, and I interviewed her to talk about her story. What she said was that she started out by doing these hair demos for like various hair products. And she was good at it and got some positive feedback. And she realized she really liked it. So she started speaking in that way. And she was a pretty smart and well-connected hairdresser. And she had all kinds of corporate clients in San Francisco where she was working. And so she mentioned to them that she did these speeches. You know, a lot of her corporate clients said, oh, really? You do that? Will you speak to my team?
Mm-hmm.
And at first, she wasn't getting a lot of money. Some of it was free. Some of it was very low paid. But she was able to be giving talks to a lot of the major companies and use their name and things like that. But one of the things that really stayed with me, she said she had a 10-year lease on her salon, and she was not going to break that lease. It was going to cost a lot of money to do that. And so she said that the way she thought of it was making a career transition. She said it was kind of like getting a divorce. I mean, it would be pretty foolish to just get mad and say, well, I'm done, and walk out the door and then say, okay, my gosh, what next? What do I do? You want to have a plan. You want to have a strategy. You want to know what your steps are going to be. So she took that 10-year period and said, that's my runway. And for the first few years, all she did, any money she made from her speaking, she would reinvest back into the business, whether it was getting nice videos done or upgrading her training, things like that, to get really good and really ready. And at the time she hit the 10-year mark, she was ready, and she had replaced all of her income that she got as a hairdresser speaking, and was able to just walk into it in a very economically sound position.
Oh, that's a beautiful story. She must be incredibly proud of that. Well, it's just what we're saying. There's a way to do it.
That's right. Yes.
There's definitely a way to do it if you're mindful and have a plan and so forth. So what have been the most palpable benefits in your career, life and career, for you using your talents and chiseling out a career on your own terms? What have been the most powerful positive benefits?
Well, I think when you look at positive psychology and research into the question of what really makes people happy, what really makes people fulfilled, one of the biggest factors is autonomy. And just being able to make your own decisions, decide what you're going to do, when you're going to do it. And that automatically leads to a lot of fulfillment. And if you can layer that on top of a sense of purpose, then you're in pretty good shape. Yes. And so for me, being an entrepreneur, I think, is really immensely satisfying. I love the idea that I'm sure it would be sort of stressful for some people, but I really embrace the idea that the amount of money that I make is based on my wits. It's based on if I can come up with better ideas or better ways to serve people, I will make more money. Mm-hmm. And that is very fulfilling and satisfying. And the fact that I'm able to choose the timing of when I do things, if I need to take a day off, I can. I mean, I'm sure that I absolutely work way more as an entrepreneur than I did as a salaried employee.
Right.
But just having that knowledge, having that freedom and flexibility to know that if I need to go to a doctor's appointment, or if I want to go meet a friend for lunch, I can do it and not have to ask anybody.
Yes.
Is a very powerful feeling.
Yes, it utterly is. So you've given us some great insights and tips from your own career and your own strategic thinking about your career, in addition to what you've already given us. Can you summarize just a few tactics and strategies that you share with listeners that would help them move forward on their journey?
Absolutely. So in terms of some tips or strategies for listeners, I would say that one of the most important things in terms of discovering your talents and your passions. Something that in writing Reinventing You, I discovered is such a valuable strategy, but that doesn't get talked about a lot, is actually finding ways to leverage your charitable involvement as a way of professional development and also learning more about what you want to do in the world professionally. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people kind of bucket it as, oh, that's giving back, that's separate. But actually, you're going to have a lot more time in your life and room in your life for doing charitable work if you also say, oh, well, yes, it's giving back, but also the time that I spend doing it is an investment in professional development. It's an investment in networking. It's an investment in me learning in a very low-risk environment. I think that social media is fun and interesting. Let me experiment with that and see if I really like it. And if I do, maybe I want to spend more time making that more of a focus in my career.
Yeah, well said. That's exactly right. So you're a writer, intellectual. So what about books that have stood out for you in your journey?
There's a lot of really great ones that I love. One that I really think is a classic when it comes to understanding people, and this is beneficial in the professional world, but also just understanding human beings, is Influence by Robert Cialdini. He is the preeminent psychologist of organizational behavior, and his book Influence, it's sold more than 2 million copies. It's wow. Enormously popular, and it's very well written too. It's just a joy to read, and it really explains what are the factors that cause people to be persuaded. So it's just so insightful whether you are a parent trying to motivate your kids, or if you're a boss trying to motivate your employees, just knowing some of these things is kind of a valuable tool in your toolkit. So I liked that a lot. And another one that I always like to recommend when it comes to networking and to, you know, how to build real relationships with people, true classic in the field, is Never Eat Alone by Keith Ferrazzi.
Yes, that's a great book. So what about this amazing thing called the internet? You talked about Facebook earlier. How are you using the internet in your life and career?
So one of the ways that the internet has been very valuable to me is the fact that anybody can be a publisher these days.
Yes.
And it's pretty great that we are now able to get our ideas out there. We don't have to just throw up our hands and say, well, nobody said I could do it, so it's their fault that I'm not being heard. Now, there's no one to blame. We can take that responsibility on ourselves, and it's really a very powerful force.
Yes, exactly. So what are you proudest of? That's an easy question.
Well, probably it would be my books. From the time I was young, I wanted to be an author, and to have actually accomplished that and written a couple of books that people have said that they enjoy and found beneficial is definitely a meaningful thing.
Exactly. Well, Dory Clark, what a great pleasure being with you today. We so much appreciate you sharing the highlights of your fascinating journey, and I know that listeners have learned lessons that will help them on their journeys. So how do those listeners connect with you?
Thank you, Don. The best way to connect up is on my website, doryclark.com. I actually have a free giveaway if folks are interested. It is a 42-page workbook that I adapted from Stand Out. It's a self-assessment workbook that actually walks people step by step through the process of developing their own breakthrough ideas and sharing them with the world.
Oh, my word. That sounds wonderful.
I think it's pretty cool. It's actually 139 questions, so it's really meant to get people thinking about their own lives and the contributions they can make. And they can get it all for free on my homepage. It's just doryclark.com, DoreClark.
Oh, that's such a gift. Congratulations, and thank you for that. Listeners know that you can go to discovertalentpodcast.com and click on podcast and find Dory Clark's interview and the highlights of the interview, but also these links that you just shared with us. So please do that. Thank you across the world, listeners, for joining us again for another daily podcast. And you know, we have an ebook, What Do Highly Successful People Actually Do to Succeed? 12 Proven Career Building Strategies to Help You Do What You Love. And please, these are the thoughts and strategies from opinion leaders and thought leaders from across the world. And please take advantage of it. It's free, and it might be a kickstart for you and your career. You can also subscribe for free on iTunes and Stitcher. If you like our show, we'd love for you to do that and tell us how we can serve you best, what you want to hear from us. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We don't learn them. We cannot ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive, We thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.